All right, Jackson, now that we're settling in, I would like you to tell me a little bit about why you are seeking therapy.
Well, I think a little bit is that I've really lost my identity, I feel like, over the years. And a big part of that, I think, is just kind of like growing up. My real name isn't Jackson, actually. It's Brad. You see,
Okay.
I was named Brad. And it was mostly after my father. And I've always felt like I've been sort of in my father's shadow for a long time, especially since my other brother, also Brad, is, named the same. And there's no like junior. They didn't add that or second or third or whatever. It's just Brad. I think part of that is because my dad's, my Brad dad, his dad was also Brad. And then before that, there was Bradley Angelson. So that was the only one that's different. But then it's just kind of been Brad. And I mean, ever since my dad, Brad, married my mom, Brad, it's been a little bit confusing trying to figure out who's. And then the dog came along, Bradley.
Is your mother, did she change her name to Brad or was she born
No,
Brad?
I was born Brad.
And you have two brothers,
Born Brad
Brad.
and Brad. My brothers are Brad, yeah. The other brother's Brad. Anyway, being a father has been difficult, but I think that Bradalina is going to do quite well in this world. Welcome to Homegrown Horror. Glad to have you here today. Yeah, beautiful day. Welcome to another one of it. And you got some, we got some amazing research
They're
notes
all
that
handwritten.
I see in front of
There's
me.
a nice little story to go along with this, but before I like hop into it, how are you doing?
I'm fantastic, dude. We played D&D last night. I introduced y'all to a talking sword named
I
Roslyn.
feel like you're so proud of Rosalind.
I'm super. Oh my gosh. Because I'm so happy, and y'all don't even know what Rosalind does yet, but
Oh,
I'm
God.
so excited for that to all be revealed on itself. I spent a long time thinking about Rosalind because my thought was like, I do want to introduce a talking sword into the group or a sentient weapon of some sort.
Yeah.
And it was kind of difficult to think through like what would make the most sense. As far as like a character choice. And I didn't want to just rip off of somebody else, but like
Yeah.
everyone's done the evil sword. I mean, like the Dungeons Master Guide does have like a section
Yeah.
about cursed swords and weapons and sentient evil weapons. Like that seems to be sort of the normal gimmick. And I wanted to make sort of a more chaotic, neutral, sort of sword.
Chaos.
Chaos. But yeah, Rosalind is super random and super
I'm
quirky.
super
I'm super
quirky.
quirky. Oh my gosh, I'll
You're freaking
kill them.
He's like, oh my God, am I getting out of hand? Oh my God. And I was like, oh Lord. Fantastic.
Yeah, no, a lot of fun. But yeah, dude, it's been that was kind of like the thing I was looking forward to the most in general.
That was pretty much the
That was
highlight of
my
my week. That was
highlight.
the big highlight of my week. Spring is springing. We got a little rain today. I walked outside for a little bit. I'm like, oh, it's not too bad. And then it started pouring, and I was like,
Very classic sort of New England weekend where it just begins like raining, where the rest of the week will be gorgeous and then you're just inside click clacking those keys for somebody.
I did go to the beach though
Oh, yeah, that's
on
true.
Friday because my patho trajectory on Friday was I got home from the office, I picked up Allegra, went to the library so I could do the research, put a pin in that. We went to Red's and got ice cream, and then we went and stuck our little toes in the water at the beach. It
Wonderful.
was like the water was frigid, but oh my God, did it feel so good.
It's gotta,
Oh, it
getting that
feels.
Getting that like sand between your toes mm-hmm. and the ocean lapping on those little piggies.
It feels so good. And there was a guy who was he was surfing, mm-hmm. but he had like this big like parasail thing. And so he was like getting all his stuff set up and he Wild. Was just sort of like, the water's nice and toasty, right? But we had this, Allegra and I had this conversation about the fact that Maine has a big surfing community, but they're a completely different breed from surfers everywhere else because they surf in the winter. Yeah. That's when the waves are biggest here.
That is true. Like, if you go to any of the beaches in Maine in the middle of winter, the surge is insane. Yeah, like, when we were in Cape Elizabeth this one weekend, I forgot what the little park is.
You were at William.
I think it's
Fort Williams.
Yeah, Fort Williams. So Fort Williams, if you ever go down there, it has this, like, very rocky little beach that you can swim in the summer. But winter, ill-advised, because on this craggy sort of shoreline of rock, this rocky sort of beach area, the waves were just like getting up to 10, 12 feet. That was like the highest I've ever seen them before. And I mean, the waves that were crashing against like this one sort of fortified structure, like were getting all the way up over the walls.
Yes.
And so it was like once it was crashing, it was like shooting up like 30 feet high. It was pretty awesome.
And that's when the surfers go out and, you know, they're all insulated in their little wetsuits and they don't feel the cold. The cold never bothered them anyway.
Never bothered them anyway. I'm wondering what the life cycle is on a surfer around here. I mean, actually,
they were all like, most of the surfers that I've seen, they're like older folks.
Yeah, actually, I was about to say, like, I know one surfer and they're in their 50s, you know, and they just crush it.
Yeah, that's I don't know if it's just sort of like, it's just something that they kind of fall into, like as they are, I don't know, hitting retirement or whatever. They're like, this is my thing.
It is kind of like a very specific thing that it's like right place, right time to even get into surfing. Mm-hmm. Like I went surfing once in my life as sort of like a practice, like learn how to surf kind of class.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I was kind of like, this is fun, but I also like, how the fuck do you even like get started with this? Because to me, I was like, I don't know how much surfboards are, but it feels like it's expensive.
Probably.
You know?
I grew up boogie boarding.
Yeah, there you go.
I was
skimboarding.
I always ate shit skimboarding.
Yeah.
But like, because growing up in Old Orchard, like I spent most of my time in the ocean. Mm-hmm. So lots of body surfing, lots of boogie boarding, like that was literally just, I would do that all fucking day. My grandmother would just sit on the beach and watch me and just eat shit in the waves.
I think for like where most of I lived as a kid, like I was at least an hour away from the beach. So it was not really an super accessible thing. So it was like, if I went surfing, yeah, I would boogie board, you know, get my little boogie board. I had like, I remember I wanted a boogie board really badly and getting one.
Yeah.
But for the most part, just swimming. Nothing too intense.
I have coworkers in the South that, like, again, they live, like, an hour away, and I'm just sort of like,
How could you?
I tense up because, like, I'm such a beach girl.
Uh-huh.
And it's, like, my blood is 95% ocean water.
See a doctor about that. It's a miracle you're standing.
Oh, my goodness. Oh. Speaking of like,
that's why you're so salty.
I know. I am salty. But so, you know, today we're talking a little bit about nostalgia and, you know, me growing up on the beach. This story is nostalgic for two reasons. I'm going to take you back to 2021.
2021.
September 2021. And for those of you paying attention, that is when we started this podcast. So at that time, I got a message from a Margaret from the Maine Murderinos saying like, yo, here's a story that you should check out. My parent, I think it was their parent, wrote a book about this case. And I was like, oh, cool. I'm going to look into it. I'm going to cover it. It is now 2024. And here I am. However, I have additional, so the rest of the story goes as follows. So this book is called Took Three Lives, The True Account of the John Lane Murder-Suicide of 1897 at Bonnie Eagle, Maine by J.D. Libby.
Hot damn.
It is impossible to find this book.
It's a long title, too.
Yes, it is impossible to find this book. I found it, there was just this rando used book website selling it for like $40, $50.
Whoa, okay.
And now that I have held the book in my little hands, I'm so glad I didn't buy it. Because yeah. It is a thin little
guide. It's a thin guide.
And
I mean, it's like it's one case, you know, mm-hmm. as intense and crazy as it might be.
Buckle up. So my wife went over to our local library and like had got herself a library card and things like that. And I'd thought about going to the library to try and find it. I knew like I had looked it up and I saw that they had had it. And then a year went by and then another year went by and we just didn't go to the library. Fast forward to 2024. We no longer have a printer. And so we go to the library to print. And so I went to print something and I got a library card and I was like, I'm just gonna like order this via interlibrary loan because it's over at Thomas College and they can get it here at the library. That's fantastic. So the library system has two copies of this book. One mm-hmm. is for library use only and the other one belongs to Thomas College. On Monday, I get a phone call from the librarian being like, so this book is falling apart. Do you need to see it? Do you need it? And I was like, yes, I do. I want it. So I went and did all my notes handwritten at the library. I read this book in an hour and 30 minutes and wrote down all my notes, got it all squared away. And boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, this is a thing. And it is impossible to find any other information anywhere else. Really? I have Googled. There's like not wow. a lot.
Okay.
Especially since, so this takes place in Bonnie Eagle Village, which is in Standish.
Mm-hmm.
At the time that the book was written, the old village still was standing, but mostly abandoned. I can't even find it. Like, it's not mentioned anywhere on any town websites. Absolutely nothing. The only thing is on the Bonnie Eagle High School website is like, oh yeah, we're actually named after this little settlement. And I was like, okay. So this is definitely buried history. And I am so thankful that Margaret pointed it out. I'm sorry it took so long. But today we are talking about 27-year-old John Wadsworth Lane and his wife, May Fullerton Lane, and their 10-month-old baby, John Gordon Lane. John's family, the Lanes, are very well known in this area. They are some of the first settlers in the Saccabee Valley area.
Would you say that as the Lanes, they led the path?
I think they did. Okay. They laid the path. They laid the path.
Maybe a street, you could say. The street to civilization? I don't know.
Perchance. John's father, Charles W. Lane, he kind of comes from a pretty well-to-do family.
A pillar of the community, yes. You could say.
His brother, Charles W. Lane. I mean, no, sorry, not Charles W. John W. Lane. There's lots of W's.
There's too many W's.
Okay,
so let me just get this clear. So we got John, we got Mary, we got Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Yes.
We've got...
That's what I thought, too!
Another John.
So, let me start this. So we have Charles W. Lane, whose son is John W. Lane.
Too many Johns, all right?
How
biggest complaint right so, now. Too many Johns.
So John W. Lane, who is one of the pivotal characters of our story, okay. His uncle is John W. Lane.
No,
he's
stop
named
it.
After his uncle.
Oh, my God.
John W. Lane, who is a rich bitch about Portland.
Okay.
And
Uncle John, rich bitch.
Yes, when Uncle John passes away.
Okay, can we start referring to the kid as Little John?
The baby?
Baby John, yeah.
Yeah, baby John Gordon
is
Little John.
Okay.
So we have Big John, Little John, Uncle John.
And then Joseph Gordon.
There we go. I like that. Okay. So when Uncle John passes away, I guess it's because his nephew is named after him. He leaves him a majority of his estate.
He was just flattered.
Plus a large piece of property.
Did he have no other kids?
It doesn't appear to be. He did give a little bit away to other family members. It's also worth mentioning that John also has a sister, Margaret, who appears to not have gotten anything out of this deal.
Rude as hell.
Yeah. So Uncle John passes away, and then Father Charles also passes away. So John is doing pretty good living off of his family's money.
Little John's
crushing Additionally, it. Yeah. His wife, May, also her father passes away. So she is getting a little bit of money from her father's estate. And let me find where I put my... Yeah, so from Uncle Lane, they're getting $500 a year. Oh. And then May is getting 10...
So a little bequest there.
Yes.
Okay.
So they get $500 a year from Uncle John's estate. And then May is getting $10 a week from her father's estate. The trustee writes her a check, sends it off to her. So they're doing pretty good. They have a comfortable
for
living.
For this time period.
Yeah. They have a little farmhouse. Big John runs the farm, and they had been married for about 2 years at this point. They have their 10-month-old son, and things are looking really good. Neighbors really like them. They have a neighbor who comes over and helps them periodically to do house cleaning. She lives with them for a little bit. They have some relatives. They're a kind of distantly related. They're not like within, but they're Lanes. They just live right across the street. So they have this nice little community. Everybody kind of knows them. Everybody thinks that they're a nice little couple. And everything sort of comes to a screeching halt on April 29th of 1897. And if some of you notice, today is April 28th.
Whoa!
As I was reading this book, I was like, wait a second.
Like, recording on the anniversary. We're going to summon a ghost, I think.
Please fucking no.
Yes, give me a ghost.
Goddamn. So, it's 8 a.m. on April 29th. Uh-huh. And Miss Emma Dodge, she's the one who... She lived with the couple for a little bit. And she comes over to help May clean, because, you know, it's hard when you got a little baby. Mm-hmm. So she comes and she helps watch the baby. They clean. She helps them do their daily things. So she's just doing her, you know, she shows up and she finds the doors open. And she's sort of like, that's weird. She walks in, kind of glances around. She doesn't really see anybody up and about, which is a little weird. You know, usually they probably are up by this time. He's a farmer. Farmers usually get up pretty early to start doing their work. So she's like, it's a little odd. She walks into the dining room and she finds 22-year-old May under the dining room table.
Ooh, that's not good. Maybe she's just fixing a leg, though. We don't know yet.
And she is like...
motionless.
Yeah, so she starts calling for help. She like runs across the street.
Oh, she immediately runs out of
Yeah,
that,
she so, immediately yeah. is like, something, this
fuck
is
no,
not,
fuck no,
this is
out,
not, this
out.
Is not normal. This is absolutely not normal. She runs across the street.
That's actually really smart to like not like remain in the house because you don't know.
You don't know. Like, you don't know. And yeah. I think that's the, even though like this is a very quaint little town, nothing really happened.
No, it's super surprising.
It's still just
right?
sort of like, this isn't normal. Maybe also like, if she had a medical emergency, she's like, something's wrong. I need to get somebody else. This is above my pay grade.
Right.
So she runs across the street to get Samuel W. Lane, who is, again, a distant relative of John. And his wife, his son, and his daughter, they hear her. They come over to try and console her. The son, Percy, is the first person to enter the house after Mrs. Dodge. You know, sees Mrs. Lane. He goes up to her. He initially, again, thinks like maybe she's fainted. But as he gets closer, he sees that she has several bloody wounds on her head.
Oof.
And Samuel is immediately like, we have to find the baby. Mom is dead.
Yeah. Where's the baby?
Where is the baby? They also, they called the baby Johnny, but again, it was super confusing because we have John, we have Johnny, yeah, we have Uncle John.
How old's the baby at this point?
10 months.
10 months. Oh, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, like, you're going to have to, that's at the point where you're still going to, like, be monitoring them quite a bit when it comes to, like, feeding and everything. So, mm-hmm. It's like, ooh, how long has she been down? So, it's like, yeah.
Is John somewhat, like, what's going on?
Yeah.
So, he goes into the sleeping room.
Mm-hmm.
He's looking around. There's blood absolutely everywhere.
Oh, no.
It's covering the bed. It's covering the floor. It's splattered on the walls.
So she must have, like, come from that room, was being assaulted in that room, and then came out to that kitchen area.
This immediately causes more panic.
Yeah, yeah.
They enter the parlor where they find 10-month-old Johnny covered in his own blood, laying next to the body of his father, John. Who also has a gunshot wound.
Mm.
And the fire, like, the other thing to note is the fire is, like, the stove is still going.
Okay.
This is a horrific scene.
Yeah.
They call for the coroner, whose name is Hobson. Hobson immediately walks in and is like, I have no jurisdiction. Like, this is insane. I cannot process this scene. So
right
that's
now.
When they call for Coroner Perry, who is from the York County. They also have the undertaker, Mr. M.S. Spear, on the scene as well. As the examination of the bodies is happening, there are also some other things that are found in the house that are like, okay. We find a revolver by John with two empty chambers. There are newspapers that have been...
Wait, so did the baby get shot? The baby was shot?
Please hold.
Okay.
Please hold.
I'm holding.
There are newspapers that are spread out on the floor to protect it in the parlor.
It's very premeditated.
There is also legal papers on that seem to be, like, put together. There's a deed with some land that John had bought, as well as tax receipts, his pocketbook, which contained about $150, and a note that said, Samuel McNinch, 735 Tremont Street, Boston, Massachusetts, Margaret W. Lane, 410 Massachusetts Avenue, Northwest Washington, D.C., M.S. Spear, private funeral, bury me just as I am.
What the fuck?
So, Samuel McNinch is John's maternal uncle. Margaret is his sister. This is a note to say, please contact them, bury me, like, I want a private funeral.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're taking this as a suicide note.
Okay.
They're like, this is a murder-suicide. Pretty quickly, yeah. They're like, this is a murder-suicide. There is no question that anyone else was involved. This, for sure, was John's doing. So Miss Lane, May, was shot 3 times, and one entered, like, right under her right eye, and one entered in through her temple, and the way that they described it is, like, there were actual, like, the bullets didn't exit. You could see, like, the little bulges.
From where they were attempting to exit.
Correct.
Okay.
The baby was shot in the head.
Oh, fuck.
At close range, because there actually was a burn mark from the hot powder right on his cheek.
Mm.
When I said, like, I told you were going to hate this.
Yeah.
And then John shot himself in the head. He was also wearing his best suit and a satin tie.
Shithead. Gotta look good. Yeah, for what? Murdering your family? Yeah. Asshole.
As they look closer, also in the sleeping room, they find there were 6 bullet holes in the ceilings and through the partitions. Again, like I said, there's blood everywhere.
So 6 bullet holes in the ceiling. He Yosemite Sammed it or some shit. So he reloaded at some point.
They also did find a box of cartridges that was bloody. So at some point, yeah, he had reloaded.
Yeah, because there's 2 missing in the chamber. So yeah, and then there's 6 shots and there's many other gunshot wounds.
And
yeah.
It appears that he shot at May several times.
Yep.
Coroner Hobson. He turns over the house to the selectmen, Willie M. Libby, Emery Rich, and H.H. Sturgis. this is a crime scene. Mm. They get what they need, and they turn everything over to the selectmen, and the questions begin. Like I said, their money seemed to be in good order. They both had a fairly good income coming from the estates. They had the farm. It's just, they were like, this is so bizarre.
Yeah.
And especially as the picture of the day, like what had happened that day, throws everything else askew. The day before, I mean. Someone had been setting fires on the Lane farm, and so John went with Mrs. Dodge's son, Gerald, to go to the constable to just, like, talk about what next steps would be. And Gerald was like, yeah, he was really normal. There wasn't really anything off. And he had been seen the day before, like, with his son at the blacksmith shop, and everything seemed really, really normal. Mm-hmm. You're just mimicking my hand movements.
I thought it would be good to emphasize along with you. Everything seemed normal.
Yeah. However, some people start...
You're so Italian. I just...
It's also pretty French.
Everything you do is just like, you gotta... There's little animated movements with
your hands. I articulate with my hands a lot. Some neighbors start...
creeping about.
Sort of being like, okay, was this guy the perfect husband and father? Not quite. One of his neighbors, Mr. Pitt Sawyer, he was like, Johnny was always kind of freaky, and he would sleep with his revolver, and his uncle Samuel was also like, yeah, he also sometimes would wake up in the middle of the night and start shooting his revolver. And he said, quote, I have been out too many times to find Johnny shooting his pistol to think it worth paying any heed to it.
What the fuck? Unquote. So this guy just was constantly trigger happy?
Yeah, so a lot of people actually heard this shooting. And about 20 minutes.
And people were just like, whatever.
Mm-hmm. So I think it was around 11 p.m. on the 28th. And it was about 20 minutes from the first shot to the last shot. And people were like, Johnny out doing his thing again.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Additionally, Lane's mother was noted to be, quote, not just right. And his grandmother was a, quote, confirmed lunatic. So we might have some mental health
in history
in this family.
Man, what a doctor's visit. Going in there, certified freak.
Coroner Perry was like, again, this is definitely a murder-suicide. Like, everything pointing to it. Like, whether it has anything to do with mental health or not.
Yeah.
Like, we need an inquest to determine. Because even though he is also dead, we need to determine what the fuck happened.
How did we get here?
His uncle, Samuel McNinch, arrives on May 1st. Nobody actually had given him the full picture of what had happened.
Oh, so he's coming into this with no real idea.
And he's devastated.
Yeah, I'd imagine.
He's just completely devastated. And Margaret also shows up, and Margaret is overcome with grief, and she just keeps saying, like, I wish I had been there. Maybe it wouldn't have happened, but a lot of people there thought to, and the rate of, I don't know if it was trying to console her, but they were like, if you had been here,
you would have died.
You would have also died.
Yeah.
It's very, very possible that you would have also died.
Got this lunatic just blasting his pistol.
Some more stuff also starts coming out after, you know, the initial murmurings of like, oh, he goes out and shoots a lot. People start talking about the fact that he was incredibly jealous.
He was a jealous boy?
He was a jealous man. And his wife was very well known, very well loved. And so that made him very angry. He actually had attacked a summer boarder who was friendly with May. He attacked him. He also had an uncontrollable...
Make him dance, like, with his gun, like the cowboy movie.
he apparently had a the Biddeford Weekly Journal, like the first couple ones that came out, they were like, oh, you know, he was kind and temperate, but then they'd started talking about he had a roving disposition. He liked to flirt and maybe sleep around a little bit.
He was jealous, but also was cheating.
Yeah, he also has an uncontrollable temper. There is a story about how he struck a horse with the sharp end of a hammer.
Hey, sir!
And then there is another story of there was a sick animal, and so someone had come over to help him with it, and they're like, oh yeah, I think we can do something for it. He just pulls out his gun and kills it.
What the fuck, man?
So there are some stories about they're sort of like...
So he's a bit of a nutty boy. Jealous. A lot of red flags.
Lots of red flags. May 2nd, John, May, and their baby, they have a public funeral, which is interesting because they requested a private funeral, but it does feel like, it seems like they put the notice out for the funeral, like, the morning of. So not a whole lot of people showed up, but Everybody knew it was happening. Super wild. They're all buried in a single grave, side by side.
The fuck?
In Maplewood Cemetery in Bonnie Eagle Village.
I thought they would have... Which is outlandish. You'd think they probably had the money for individual little holes.
It's also really weird because it's like, he literally killed them.
Like, what the fuck is up with that? Yeah.
I don't know if they're just sort of like, oh, you know, they should be... I can't say that I know what people are thinking in the 1890s.
No idea.
1890s? Is that where we are?
97. 1897.
A lot of people, after they're buried, it just keeps going. People are like, I think that he probably was planning it. I think that, you know,
there seemed to be some sort of, well, yeah, premeditated.
Absolutely premeditated. They find... some more people start saying like, well, I was just talking to him the other day. He was going to buy I was going to buy a cow from him. And he was like, yep, well, I'm not going to be here a great while longer.
Okay. Care to elaborate, sir?
The Biddeford Weekly Journal says, quote, sentiment has been strong in the little village against the murderer. And there were many at the funeral Sunday who would have been better satisfied to have seen his body tossed in the Saco River than accorded a Christian burial in pretty Maplewood Cemetery in Standish, unquote.
Okay, so everyone else also is like, this is a little fucked up.
Yeah, at this point, like...
So, I don't get it. It's like, why can't we just get another hole? Put him in the corner or something. I don't know.
Put him in the fucking corner.
Make him think, put him there. He can think about what he's done.
Mm-hmm. A coroner's inquest is finally held on May 5th, and the jury discards any discussion of insanity. Mostly because I think the suicide note, the fact that he was...
It's just enough to be like...
Telling people like, hey, you know, like...
And it's kind of like, what is what good is it to, like, do the insanity route at this point? Yes. I think there's a bit of that.
So their verdict was rendered, quote, John W. Lane feloniously, willfully, and with malice aforethought committed the crimes ascribed to him... The murder of his wife, May Fullerton Lane, and infant son, John Gordon Lane, unquote. So they were like, he did it. Absolutely. So we don't have a great picture, though, of what happened. The selectman Sturgis sort of put together what he thought happened based on what they saw at the house. So what they believe is John, you know, he gets dressed, he puts on his suit. He takes his baby and he shoots him. This wakes up May. She wakes up with a start and she's like, something's wrong. She goes down, like, either he comes into the room or she goes downstairs. It's not very clear, but he starts shooting at her.
Mm-hmm.
And she attempts to escape, which is how she ends up in the dining room.
Yeah.
The prevailing theory is she fought to the death.
Mm.
She did her best to get out of there. But having completed his deed, He then puts together his suicide note, and he gets all of his documents in order so people don't have to go, it's all right there, I did it for you. And then he takes his own life.
Gotcha.
And that is sort of what everyone accepts at this point. That's the only, we really don't know. Because also at that point, there isn't a whole lot of, there's no survivors. And there isn't a whole lot of police work that can be done in terms of, like, you know, trying to put together clues, looking at DNA and things like that.
Well, I was even determining time, like, of death. I was even going to say, like, at any sort of, like, not almost immediate obvious idea of another third party involved in this, or someone else coming into here. It's like no boot prints or anything like that. Just kind of like, or any kind of like sort of odd objects left behind. Everything seemed to have been generated and was originally just inside of the house.
Mm-hmm. And it's very interesting to look at this particular case, because some of the other ones that I've covered that are like super oldie timey, the idea of like mental health doesn't come up.
Mm-hmm.
Because no, maybe it wasn't like insanity and it could have been premeditated, but that doesn't mean that there wasn't something going on that is missed because it's the 1890s, especially considering the fact that we do have a history of it within his family. But that all goes to say he's like, fuck that guy.
Yeah, no.
Fuck that guy.
Yeah, fuck him. Like, what an asshole.
I really don't know if...
I mean, in general, it just sounded like a piece of shit. And it's kind of weird to me that didn't immediately, like, come up across...
That he was a piece of shit,
He was a piece of shit, yeah. It sounded like he was just constantly angry, he slept around... Or flirted around or whatever. It's not cool.
They just say roving disposition.
Yeah, roving disposition. That was me extrapolating. Like, so, and beating animals and shit. Like,
mm-hmm.
Just shooting his gun off randomly. It sounded like an absolute fucking nightmare to be with.
Oh, absolutely. And thinking about it really sucks too, because she was like a very promising young woman. She was a socialite from Boston.
Yeah.
Very well-to-do family.
It was just like, she could have done so much better, found a individual, and then she gets this asshole that ends up killing. I'd be pissed, you know? I'd be 100% pissed. Like, oh, well, you've been a dick and then you kill me? Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I hope she's like... beating his ass in the afterlife.
Yeah, just kicking him in the grave.
But this book was also really fascinating because there were some excerpts from the author, but a lot of them were collected articles from the Portland Evening Express, Biddeford Weekly Journal, and the Maine Sunday Telegram. So it's another one of those things where it's so interesting to see the evolution.
Yeah.
Of as each of these articles is coming out. More details. And it's almost like this really beautiful timeline.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel I'm so thankful that this book does exist. I am devastated that there's one copy and it's falling apart. Just the fact that, like, this is also where I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
For the most part. I went to through the Bon Eagle school systems. I lived in Lymington. This is... when they would talk about certain areas, they talked about, like, Lymington Rapids. Like, I spent a lot of time there as a kid. They talk about, like, Hardscrabble Road. They, you know, different places in Standish and in Buxton. And I'm like, I know this area. And it's one of those sort of surreal things of, this is a big deal. Like, this is a big deal for this area in this time period. And it's just almost completely gone.
Yeah. Like, this being, like, one of the only records that you're able to, like, find that was a good resource to kind of, like, bring it all together. It is wild that, like, we couldn't find anything else beyond this.
I guess if I had, like, a newspapers.com account or something, maybe if I had dug or, like, was able to go to a library that had a lot of, if they had a lot of surviving newspapers, maybe. But this was just so, like, done in such a tight little package.
Yeah.
And It was great that they just were like, this is what's important.
You're lucky all the pages were there.
That was the other thing is because like they were in order.
Yeah.
That's the thing that was so they were falling apart. I think it's just like the glue in the spine was just like, I'm done.
Just gave up.
It gave up. But the book itself was in pristine condition.
Okay, very cool.
It was just the glue, I think, had...
The binding was retired. Yeah. Well, you mentioned it was like a smaller book. I would imagine, it's going to be a thin binding on the back.
Yes.
And it's just glue. There's probably not much backing in there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was just a small little paperback. Yeah. The other thing
it's
that
like
I...
a Magic Treehouse book.
Yes, a little bit. The other thing that I'm just so thankful for is that the library called me and didn't just send it back. Because she literally was like, they shouldn't have sent this. And I was like, I'm really fucking glad they did.
Yeah.
Because I am so thankful that I was able to finally get to this story, number one. Partly because it could so very easily become lost history.
Yeah.
And I'm like, throwing this out on the public record, if you can't get your hands on this book... Now you know this story. And it's from the area that I grew up. And that is the other thing. Like I said, I didn't realize that this was going to be coming out around the anniversary of the murder as well. And so it felt fortuitous that this, it happened the way that it did. And that is the story of the murder of May Fullerton Lane and John Gordon Lane by one John Wadsworth Lane. Fuck him.
Amazing. Wonderful. Got hands off to you. Congratulations.
I do want to go, because I'm not sure if their headstone is still up in Maplewood Cemetery, but Allegra and I have to head out that way at some point.
Ooh, yeah,
in the next couple weeks. I was thinking.
Try to maybe get a picture even, you know?
Yeah, just go by it, because again, I grew up near a historic cemetery in Lymington.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I walked by it all the time when I would go for walks. But I took so many field trips also to that cemetery to be like, oh, look, here is the founder of the town. Here's this historic person. Here's this historic person. So I've always had an interest in that, too, of going and looking and trying to find and see the history in that way as well. So I was thinking I might swing by, but it looks like a pretty little cemetery. Lots of historic graves in there.
That's pretty awesome. I do like going to like even small grave sites just to kind of like see, oh yeah, what's the sort of like generations that
absolutely
have been buried in here. It's always fascinating to kind of see all that.
We've also talked about the really weird like roadside cemeteries that Maine has too.
Yes. Yes. I mean, that's a big thing in Connecticut too. Some of the ones that stand out the most is like there's this little wilderness trail in Thomaston, Connecticut, where I grew up. If you kind of like take this pathway sort of up this hill, you find like 3 to 5 sets of gravestones totally weathered away. You can't hardly read them. You can make out the dates a little bit, but it's like, yeah, that was like Revolutionary War, like gravestones just in the middle of the woods that no one really tends to. It's so wild that they're still there. I'm glad they're still standing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you think that vandals would get to it.
Absolutely. I feel like something that's really interesting that I noticed, because we were driving by one of the local cemeteries and it still has like a lot of damage from the last storm.
Mm-hmm.
And something that I think is interesting about our culture is we don't really honor our dead.
No.
Unless it's like for Memorial Day or Veterans Day, something like that, we will do that. But the rest of the year, we're just sort of like, yeah, we're just going to leave these rotting flowers everywhere. We're not going to go clean graves. We're just going to let it decay. And that is fascinating to me because so many other cultures are a lot more, what's the word that I want to use? They're more attentive. They're way more attentive to gravestones, to keeping that area clean and nice and honoring the dead through care for their final resting place.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, like, we just have so many just things that are, like, just out there. We move the... In certain situations, we're just going to move this whole thing. Fuck everyone that's interred here.
Fuck everyone that's
interred. That happened here. On the island, right? Malaga?
Yeah, everything got moved completely.
And they were just like, fuck this, I guess.
Sites, foundations, houses, everything literally just swept off of the island. Almost swept up.
Fucking wild. Literally.
Crazy that we can just try to erase history in such ways. Mm-hmm. But we've seen that a couple times, but
yeah, but, we have.
But I'm happy to say that our next millionism for today is a celebration of old history. And, you know, you mentioned that those that one coroner called the other coroner. He might have been using this to help give him a call.
Hey, hey, it's a mainism.
Well, I gotta say, so if you ever are up in the Woodstock, Maine area, what is up with all these tiny little towns doing all these tiny little weird things? It's so much fun.
We love it.
I do really enjoy it. Hold on, let me get a good picture here. Oh, it's just the same fucking picture.
It's the same fucking picture.
Hold on, let me zoom. I want to look at that. Okay, it's not going to let me. There we go. If you head all up to Woodstock, Maine, you might be familiar with old hand crank telephones. Mm-hmm. You know old hand crank telephones?
Yes.
Have you ever got to mess around with one?
I have not.
Sometimes you can like get lucky and find one like in an antique shop.
Yeah.
And you can go ahead and, you know, give it a crank in there in the antique shop. Just crank away. But one of the oldest hand crank telephone companies, or the ones that operated last, are actually from Maine. From the Bryant Pond Telephone Company, owned by Barbara and Eldon Hathaway. They kept on cranking for as long as they could. They purchased the company in 1951 and operated it from their home. They're one of the smallest hand crank companies. And then they integrated themselves in 1981 into the national dial system.
Oh,
so
that's so cool.
Took a long while. Officially, the last crank was performed in 1983. And to commemorate this small bit of history to the smallest little telephone company, they erected the largest hand crank phone in the country.
1983?
1983 was the last hand crank, and then they built this up in 2008, thanks to efforts of the town and the Historical Society.
That's neat.
It's really neat, you know? And
I'm surprised that they were cranking for so long.
They were cranking really hard for a really long time, yeah. And I think it just kind of, everybody in town liked a good crank, clearly. And I mean, with the cranking system, there's always someone listening on the other end.
Yes.
You know, you got the switchboard operator, and yes, you got to physically talk to the switchboard operator. And, like, they'll help connect you. Supposedly, everyone had their own, like, special ring that would come through. So it was a nice little thing for this community operating out of this tiny little home. Mm. Bought up eventually by a little larger company and then fully integrated into the national system. But just, you know, this town was so fond of all the cranking that they used to do, they decided to make one big model to all that crank.
Wow.
It's amazing.
It is amazing. Maine?
Have I made enough masturbation jokes
yet?
Yes,
you have. Maine does have a lot of really fascinating history. We've done a lot of historical episodes lately, and I think it's just like I'm in a mood.
Right?
I'm very in a mood.
I actually think you could crank this yourself, to be honest. I see
does
in
it
a,
move?
It looks like it in a couple instances, it looks like it does move. It looks like it's in different positions. See, it's down there.
Oh, it totally is.
Yeah, maybe? So you could go to Woodstock and just have the biggest crank of your life.
Stop it.
Look at it. Yeah, it's totally
movable. Yeah, it totally moves.
That's so cool. I mean, I really want to go. Let me get up there and start cranking.
Thank you so much.
Cranked all over Woodstock.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us today. If you would like to reach out to us, do you have any other stories that you would like us to tell? Is there something from your hometown that you think is like buried history? Did your mom or dad write a book about a crazy thing that happened in your hometown? Let us know at homegrownhorrorpod@gmail.com or reach out to us on Instagram at homegrownhorrorpod. You can always leave us some stars on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and you can also leave reviews on Apple Podcasts as well. But most of all, thank you so much for coming, especially since this has been like percolating for 3 whole years. So thank you for finally coming to see this story come to fruition. We appreciate it so much.
Thank you so much for listening to us, and keep cranking away, homies. Bye.